Now let's talk a little Rutgers men's basketball. Now, they hosted a scrimmage with St. John's for charity at Carneseca Arena. St. John's was the host team. And as is typically the case with Rutgers men's basketball, it was a stressful game that came down to the wire. Double overtime. St. John's came out on top. But we learned a lot about the team. And someone who was there to witness it, he covers the team for NJ Advanced Media, Brian Fonseca, joining us here on the WRSU crew. Brian, how's it going?
It's going good, man. I appreciate you guys having me on.
So, first question, just take us through the environment of this one. You know, an exhibition game, a lot of these scrimmages, you know, they have these secret scrimmages, but this one, highly publicized, and a lot of people were in the building to witness.
Yeah, very publicized. They really wanted to get as many people in as possible to get as much money in for the Dickey V Pediatric Cancer Center at the Jimmy V Foundation. So, I thought it was a good crowd, especially considering that Rutgers was playing a football game, and an important one at that. At the same time, I would say mostly St. John's fans, about 500, 750 Rutgers fans. And obviously the home crowd was pretty loud early on in the game. The Rutgers fans got pretty loud in the second half. And then when it was really going down the stretch of regulation and both overtimes and the game was close, the atmosphere was awesome. Carneseca Arena is a pretty small venue and intimate. So the place got really loud and it felt like a regular season atmosphere, which you don't usually get with these scrimmages, as you said. So I thought that was really beneficial for both teams. And, you know, even for me, you know, I'm not really used to running basketball on deadline, as it's been a few months, and feeling the environment. So it's got my juices flowing for hoop season as well.
Yeah, Brian, Dylan, thanks again for joining us. Just take us through the game. I was out in Indiana, so I wasn't really following it a whole bunch, but I heard they came back and forced overtime a couple times, and I'm looking at the box score now. But you know what stood out to you about the team? I remember the big talk was they just looked faster. Did it look like that at game speed?
Right. So I'll take you very quickly synopsis of the game. St. John's came out absolutely dominating Rutgers. They pressed very high. They were pressing off the inbound, and Rutgers had a very hard time dealing with that. Something I was going to write, but I didn't end up writing, is that Rutgers wants to play fast, but St. John's really sped them up early on, and that helped St. John's really build a lead. Rutgers really struggled to shoot. St. John's was shooting well, and Rutgers was a bit out of sorts and felt like they had a difficult time just dealing with St. John's. But in the second half, they came out. They really pushed the pace in transition off of rebounds. They made St. John's when Rutgers defended, they made St. John's work for every basket and drain the shot clock. But they scored a lot in transition from Jermichael Davis, who to me was the revelation of the day. I was really, really impressed with him. I didn't expect him to have much of a role this season. That kind of recalibrated. I don't think he'll play 20, 25 minutes, but I think he certainly is a 10 to 15-minute guy who can contribute. He looked like he belonged, which is a big help for them, definitely. And I would say that Derek Simpson did a lot defensively in that stretch and helped push the ball in transition. Cliff Omori throughout the whole game, I would say, was probably Rutgers' best player, and they need him to be successful this season. So it's encouraging that he was able to play well against the good big in Joel Soriano. And, yeah, I think the result, obviously, doesn't really matter. Rutgers ends up going to overtime. In overtime, they had a lead. They probably should have kept. Cliff Omori got a rebound. Rutgers is up 1 point with 20 seconds left. He goes to the free throw line. I'm sorry, Rutgers is up 2 points with 20 seconds left. He goes to the free throw line, could have iced the game, misses a free throw. St. John's goes back down, shoots a three, gets an offensive rebound, shoots a three, gets an offensive rebound, shoots a three. That one finally goes in, and then they go to double overtime. So really chaotic, really back-and-forth game, really good game for everyone.
And you talked about the backcourt and Simpson. Jermichael Davis really stepped up as well, and we know what we're getting with Gavin Griffiths. What about the front court? Because obviously there's uncertainty about Mawat Mag's availability to start the season and just how ramped up he'll be by the time things kick off in 2 weeks. What did you see from the front court besides Cliff Omori?
Yeah, Antoine Wolfolk looks, you know, the talk in the offseason is that he's lost some weight and he looks more agile. I would say that's probably fair. He's as good as he was last year on getting boards offensively and doing work in that area. So encouraged there. I think he'll be a really solid backup to Cliff. They played him and Cliff at the same time on the floor. I am not sure I buy that, because we've seen this idea in the past and it never really ever came to fruition, you know, with Miles Johnson and Cliff Omori, albeit that Antoine Wolfolk is a little bit more of a four than those other guys, but I just don't see it. I think, especially until Emmanuel Ogboe comes back maybe midway through the season, I think Antoine is probably going to be the backup center. And there was not much else besides that. I mean, Oscar Palmquist started, and he played a bit in crunch time, but as the four, and I didn't think he had a great game, to be quite honest. I thought Andre Hyatt, who looked like he played some three, some four, had a rough game too, really struggled inbounding the ball against St. John's press. So I'm not sure if he'll be the inbounder much, kind of answer that question. I mean, unless St. John's has had a really good press, which is certainly possible. So that's my takeaway from the front court. And to your point on Gavin, I'm not sure we know what we're going to get from Gavin, to be quite honest. Like, I thought he was really good in the second half. I thought he looked a little overwhelmed in the first half. I think defensively he still has a decent way to go, which I think was expected. But that is to say, I thought he was good. I just don't think we should pencil him in as a 14-point guy just yet, just because of his recruiting ranking, if that makes sense.
And kind of going off of that, I mean, people think, I mean, at least what I'm hearing around just with fans and in my opinion, I guess, Gavin Griffith's one of the one freshmen they've had in a long time. Do you think he'll, in the sense, start out right away getting a ton of minutes? He played 33 in this game. And, you know, Derek Simpson took a little bit for him to start getting ramped up and getting some quality time. But without McConnell and Mulcahy, do you feel Gavin Griffiths will be a day one starter, 30-minute player?
I do. I think so. I think he'll have a big role on this team. I think he is their most talented offensive player. I know it's not, I did say he was a bit jittery, but I think that as he plays and gets used to college basketball, he'll be their best asset. I mean, he has the best shot, the best-looking shot, I should say, on the team. Looks really smooth when he goes up for a shot, can create some space for himself, had this really nice floater in the lane where he kind of, it looks like a half jump shot, half floater. So he's the smoothest guy on the team, and I think Rutgers is going to need him to be pretty good to play well offensively. Obviously, him and Cliff being the most important, I would say maybe Gavin and Noah Fernandes and Derek Simpson are kind of in that group for number two. I think he will play a good amount of minutes, and if he doesn't, I think that's not a great sign. So I don't think he'll play 30 minutes a night, but I think he'll play, you know, 25-ish probably.
So they did lose this one, Brian, but at least to me, I feel like just getting this experience playing against a team that was very similar in the net rankings, a lot of similar expectations in St. John's, and playing in a road environment, maybe it'll be a bit more beneficial than for Rutgers, at least on the court, than last year. Last year, of course, they had that exhibition against Fairfield, and Fairfield not as in the same echelon as St. John's, obviously. And obviously, 40 minutes of game action in any form is going to get you ready for the season. But getting to play against a Big East team that also was in a similar situation, bringing in a lot of new pieces, at least to me, felt like probably a good sort of litmus test for this team. Wondering how you feel about that.
I completely agree. I think it's about as good as an afternoon as Rutgers could have gotten. They got to play on the road, which is hard. It's good to get that test out early. They got to play against a good team who's probably going to finish in the top half of the Big East, make the NCAA tournament, one of the more talented teams I think they'll play all year. Got to experience a bunch of different scenarios in, you know, going down early, making the comeback, going overtime, playing in a close game down the stretch in both regulation and overtime, feeling the atmosphere of a regular season crowd in a big game, which they probably, I mean, the Princeton game should have similar atmosphere, I'm guessing, but after that, it might be a while until they play another. I think, especially for, like you said, like Rutgers has a decent amount of new faces. They're both playing together for the first time. The freshmen are playing their first college basketball game. So I think it's very invaluable experience. I know they played together in Portugal and in Senegal. This is a whole different beast, and I think they will grow a lot from it.
Well, one last thing about the basketball game. I think the elephant in the room is how this team will respond defensively. That's the makeup of this team. That's the blueprint. And, you know, Caleb McConnell, two-time national or Big Ten defensive player of the year, and always up there in the watch list for the national player, defensive player of the year, and now Mulcahy gone as well, who could get you a couple steals. In this game and, you know, going forward, what do you, did they kind of live up to that defensively? I know St. John started out hot, but Do you kind of see this the defense taking a bit of a hit this year?
I think Steve Peichel is a bit worried. He said that to myself and a couple of people in the preseason, and Obviously, he has very high standards, so I take that with a grain of salt. I would say Rutgers was good defensively in the second half. They held St. John's 25% shooting. I must be honest, I was half watching the second half, half keeping up with the end of football and tracking all of that. But from what I saw, I would attribute that half to Rutgers playing well defensively, half to St. John's kind of, you know, they're up 18 points, the scrimmage, I'm not sure how much, and I didn't follow their rotation patterns that too. I'm not sure, I'm not sure how hard they were playing to win the game, and Rutgers was playing very hard to win the game there in the second half, so I think that kind of naturally closed the gap. I think Rick Pitino even said after the game he was glad that they didn't win by 20 because it gave his team some experience, which is something you'll never hear another coach say ever in any other scenario. I'm not ready to say this is going to be a team that's going to be one of the elite defenses that Rutgers has had. Like you said, Caleb McConnell, huge piece that's missing. It always helps to have the league's best defender. I think Cliff Omori has a chance of being one of the, if not the best defensive big man in the Big Ten, one of them. And as long as you have that anchor at the rim, and you have some, you know, fast, athletic, willing defenders on the perimeter, Derek Simpson, Jamichael Davis, I think you have the base for a good defense. Just how good, I'm not quite sure yet.
So let's shift gears to Rutgers football. Again, we're joined by Brian Fonseca from NJ Advanced Media. Now, you weren't in Bloomington to cover that game, but Rutgers did get to bowl eligibility. And I saw one of your colleagues in the AP poll voting from TCU actually gave Rutgers a vote for number 24. So Rutgers definitely exceeding expectations so far this season, sitting at 6-2. Your reaction to the win over Indiana to get to bowl eligibility?
Yeah, huge win. Obviously, they needed it to get that monkey off their back, because if you lose that game, you're entering the bye week on a blow and you're looking at the last four opponents wondering where you're going to get that sixth win. To get that win in that spot after 8 straight weeks of playing on the road, just, I mean, Indiana's pretty much dead, but still, I mean, they took the lead early. They hit them back right before halftime. A lot of spots for Rutgers, too. Rutgers was playing poorly through the pass game. There were spots there for Rutgers to let one slip, but they were rock solid, big special teams play, elite running from Kyle Menungai, who impresses me more by the week. Gavin Wimsett had his best day as a runner, the best rushing performance by a quarterback in program history. And now Rutgers is really playing with house money, which is a great spot to be in. I think the Ohio State game gets a lot of buzz because of where they stand. I think they're going to get some, you know, praise from, you know, nationally, as you said, the AP vote. Some people are going to be start noticing, and who knows? I don't think they're going to beat Ohio State. I don't think anyone is going to predict them to beat Ohio State. But weird things have happened in college football, and Ohio State doesn't look like the juggernaut they've always been. Rutgers is playing loose, elite defensively. They're at 6-2. Should be a packed crowd. I don't know, guys. I think next Saturday sets up to be one of the more memorable days in Rutgers football history, even if they lose, just because of what it means about where this program is now in the fourth year of Shiano 2.0.
The 12 o'clock kickoff might kill some of the buzz around campus, everyone kind of wanting a night game for that. But, you know, the other thing, too, to check off the box on the list of to-dos for, I would imagine, this football team, you know, it was to get to bowl eligibility. Now it's to finish over 500, get that seventh win. And we were talking about it in our first segment on the show, you know, looking at the remaining schedule, Ohio State, that would be a godsend if they won that game. But we were looking and we all pretty much agreed that Iowa would be the more winnable game. And if you had said that in the beginning of the year, you probably would have been called crazy based off of all the expectations for that team. But do you kind of concur or agree? Do you think that's a winnable game?
So I look at the next four games in two tiers. Obviously, there's the Ohio State and the Penn State, which are, you know, like you said, it would be a godsend, would be a miracle, would be one of the biggest wins in program history, either of them. So I would not pick either of those. I would say Iowa and Maryland interchangeably could be the one more win, maybe if everything really goes right, too. I would say, as bad as Iowa is offensively, and they are horrible, horrendous, they are really good defensively. They are very good in special teams. And as good as Gavin Wimsett has been in all of their wins, he hasn't thrown an interception in any of his wins. In both losses against teams with winning records, Wisconsin and Michigan. He threw a back-breaking interception. Last season, obviously, that was an issue. And Iowa has one of the top five defenses, top 10 defenses in the country. So until I can see Gavin Wimpson have a big game against a good defense, I'm not sure that he and Rutgers can overcome, again, an elite defense in Iowa. I think Maryland is more manageable just because they're not as good defensively. It's the last game of the season. I imagine Maryland will have bowl eligibility locked up. I'm sure Rutgers will have some motivation to beat Maryland after, you know, recent history of them being dominated by Maryland. And I just think it's more of an even matchup. So I could certainly see Rutgers winning in Iowa, but winning on the road against a really good defense, it's just, I know they lost to Minnesota. I just am not ready to cross that bridge yet, but certainly don't think it's impossible.
Brian, last thing before we let you go. As of where Rutgers sits now, obviously they know they've qualified for a bowl on record for the first time since 2014. And based on the projections for these last four games, which bowl game do you see as the most likely outcome for them at this point to play in December?
I think you could put Pinstripe Bowl at like minus 1,000 odds.
Oh, like, come on, Brian. I hate that bowl.
Hey, man, you're preaching to the choir here. I don't want to be sitting in Yankee Stadium in an open-air press box freezing my face off against Rutgers playing Boston College. Are you kidding me? I want to be in Las Vegas, baby. I want to be there.
I want to be there with you.
It'll be a good time.
We'll go out to the casinos, have a good old time, put it on the expense report.
But, yeah.
hopefully my bosses aren't listening to this radio hit.
Yeah, same here. Yeah,
I would prefer Las Vegas. I would like Nashville. I think that's possible if Rutgers wins one or two more games. But increasingly it looks like the Pinstripe Bowl, which is not great, it's better than Detroit. And I guess one more dark horse I almost forgot, Phoenix, is not impossible. It would be really symbolic because that was the first bowl game that Greg Schiano went to the first time around. So to go back to that place again would be a nice storyline. But yeah, I think we're going to be spending our post-Christmas football in a baseball stadium.
Well, that's the way it goes sometimes, but at least it's a bowl game. At least it's something. But obviously a lot for Rutgers fans to be excited about. Football team bowl eligible. Men's basketball season kicks off in just 2 weeks. NJ Advanced Media's Brian Fonseca covers them both. Brian, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. You guys have a good night.